Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are still going through the Missouri Compromise, or the overview of the admission of Missouri into the Union and what they ended up doing outside of the constitutional process, and how James Monroe kind of let this happen. It's on him, because the president actually should have stepped in and said, no, you cannot foreordain a state's destiny. States were sovereign. But I've contended that when you read the constitutional ratifications of Virginia, and you read anything that Monroe basically stated, he was an anti-federalist. He was basically, at that point in time, I don't want to say a Henry Lapboy, but he was actually a friend. There was kind of like this triangle between James Madison, James Monroe, and Thomas Jefferson. And while Jefferson was out, basically Monroe kind of held his credit to his position in the state house and so forth because of Patrick Henry. And he was kind of under Patrick Henry's influence in these early days. Anyway, so let me just say that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and that this is the only show that really provides solutions. I hope that you find this educational, you find this informative, and you find this motivating for you to get involved, because bottom line, we can't do anything until we all get equally informed and basically act upon the power of the knowledge we have. So, as you know, we also have a comment line. It's open 24 hours. You call anytime. We will air your comments, your questions on the show, and this way you can... It's just like having the conversation. And if it really lends to a conversation, we will call you up and have that conversation with you. We'll record it and we're going to play it. Because what we want to do is we're willing to come to you. We're willing to actually take take your dialogue or the things that are important and bring it to you. So anyway, we've got the comment line, and it's 425-270-5416. I want to thank you for listening. We've got a listener drive. We're just asking if you would please share with your like-minded friends the concept of being able to learn and understand the Constitution. I was talking to a legislator or a fellow, I think it was a fellow activist with the National Liberty Alliance. And I basically put it out there. How many people in the United States really understand the Constitution? I mean, the essence of the Constitution, what these lines meant and so forth, that it's a compact and how it was defined. There's very few people. And when I say very few, remember there's 330 million people in America, around there. And that's probably including 40 million illegal aliens, but anyway, or invaders. Let's start calling them invaders. But okay, so we have these 330 million or 300 million. Out of that, 1% of 330 would be what? Well, that would be 3.3 million. Well, we don't even have 3.3 million people in America that fluently understand the Constitution. Maybe, I don't know, I would venture to say somewhere between 30,000 to maybe 100,000, somewhere in there, that fluently understand. And when I say fluently understand, I mean they understand, but they don't understand it. The number is much smaller for anybody that understands the Constitution as defined by the ratification debate. So that is the huge differentiator as far as I'm concerned. You read the ratification debates, you have a very profound, fluent understanding of the Constitution. Now, outside of that, people that have a good understanding of the Constitution, well, that's pretty close to maybe a million. And then people that have a familiarity you know, they understand the Republican form of governance and some of these little quips of, you know, rights shall not be infringed and those types of things. Those are, you know, probably 1%, which means 3.3 million. So in other words, 99% of America doesn't really have a good fundamental grasp of the Constitution. So please, if you know people, even if they don't understand the Constitution, let them know, hey, you don't have to bask in, you know, in darkness. There's a show that actually will hold your hand over the course of the next year, 2 years, however long, and, you know, getting more and more people to get involved, because we try to really help people expand their understanding regarding the Constitution and how the Constitution was acted upon or violated, like this Missouri Compromise, moving forward. So anyway, as you know, we're just asking that you help get other people to come to the trough so that they too can feed. Now, as I say, we're in a constitutional crisis. You already know the details that we have an illegitimate president and we do not have a constitutionally appointed president of the United States at this point in time. We are in a true constitutional crisis. Excuse me. After this particular Missouri Compromise, I'm sorry, after the Missouri Compromise, we're going to get into Madison's letter to John G. Jackson regarding how to understand, because at this point in time in the 1820s, they were starting to realize that there was a lot of disagreement on what the Constitution meant. And so they wanted to get Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention. And this letter basically chastises Jackson to say, no, you can't have that. As much as I want to give it, the real way to understand the Constitution is through the ratification debates. And we're going to read his words so that you just don't take my word for it. That's the important part. That's what we try to do here for this show, is we want to make sure that you understand, not to take my word for it. Take Madison's word, take Jefferson's word, take Monroe's word, and so forth and so on. Anyway, sorry, have frog will travel, right? So I'm going to die here before, excuse me, I'm going to die here before the next episode. And it seems like this has become the new norm for me ever since my pneumonia. Anyway, so we were in the actual text, the transcript of the Missouri admission into the states. And so Section 2, as I just stated in the previous episode, defined the boundaries all the way around Missouri. I mean, from this point to this point to this point. And, you know, if you look at Missouri on the map, it kind of has, you know, this meandering look and kind of a dog leg to it when you look at the, you know, the southern east corner. You know, there's this little tail anyway, because the, you know, it's abutment or attachment with Arkansas. Anywho, so just want to kind of give you the nuts and bolts of what they do in creating this state. So they created the boundary, and then what they did was they created this concurrent jurisdiction. And I know we just covered this, but it's worth repeating, that the said state shall have concurrent jurisdiction on the river Mississippi and every other river bordering on the said state, so far as the said rivers shall form a common boundary to the said state and any other state or states now or hereafter to be formed and bounded by the same, such rivers to be common to both, and that the river Mississippi and the navigable rivers and waters leading into the same shall be common highways and forever free as well to the inhabitants of the said state as to the other citizens of the United States without any tax, duty, impost, or toll, therefore imposed by the said state. Now, I went on a little tangent when we ended the episode when I said that there is a caveat to this. States can, for navigational purposes or for the maintenance of the road, can assess a tax for using their roadways like a toll tax, as long as it is a reasonable tax in actually the cost of maintaining the highway, whether it be a waterway or a, you know, a paved way, a roadway or what have you. Back in those days, they didn't have asphalt. Everything was dirt roads or gravel or whatever. And so there were, you know, there was wear and tear, you know, potholes and so forth. So they had to maintain so that they could move commerce. The smoother the road, the better commerce could move. And this is one of the reasons why railroads became so appealing in moving commerce, because once you had that track down, it could move efficiently the same amount every day, 24/7. Anyway, Section 2, you know, like I said, defined all of these things. Now, Section 3 stated this, and this is where they get into the white and so forth, and be it further enacted that all free white male citizens of the United States who shall have arrived at the age of 21 years and have resided in the said territory 3 months previous to the day of election, and all other persons qualified to vote for representatives to the General Assembly of the said territory shall be qualified to be elected, and they are hereby qualified and authorized to vote and choose representatives to form a convention who shall be apportioned amongst the several counties as follows. And so this is where they get into the apportionment. And so we're going into promo. We'll be right back after these and get into that apportionment. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so Section 3, and be it further enacted that all free white males of the U.S. or the United States, so they're talking about citizens here. So people tell me that citizenship was not based on the United States until the 14th Amendment. Well, this is well before that. And as a matter of fact, I point out that they actually use the term citizens of the states and of the several states or common citizens throughout the Constitution. You were both a citizen of a state and a citizen of the United States. And in context, if you wanted to travel abroad, it was within the purview and jurisdiction of the federal government after 1808 to come and to go and to return to the United States through the federal government. They had the power, role, and responsibility to manage the flow of people coming in and leaving this country. Anyway, so this basically is identifying who can be a candidate. You had to be 21 years of age to be qualified to become a representative to form a convention who shall be apportioned among the several counties as followed. And so, and I just want to go through, because I'm not going to go through the entire paragraph here, but they go through every single county of Missouri at the time. And from the county of Howard, 5 representatives. From the county of Cooper, 3 representatives. And so they literally went through to ensure that each county had representation in this upcoming election for representation for this convention. And the election for the representatives aforesaid shall be held on the first Monday and 2 succeeding days of May next throughout the several counties aforesaid in the said territory, and shall be in every respect held and conducted in the same manner and under the same regulations as prescribed by the laws of the said territory regulating elections therein for members of the General Assembly, except that the returns of the election in that portion of Lawrence County included in the boundaries aforesaid shall be made to the county of Wayne as to provided in other cases under the laws of said territory. So this is just a lot of procedural stuff, but go on in section 4, it says, and it be further enacted that the members of the convention thus duly elected shall be, and they are hereby authorized to meet at the seat of government of the said territory on the second Monday of the month of June next. And the said convention, when so assembled, shall have power and authority to adjourn to any other place in the said territory, which to them shall seem best for and convenient for the transaction of their business, and which convention, when so met, shall first determine by a majority of the whole number elected, whether it be or not be expedient at the time to form a constitution and state government for the people within the said territory, as included within the boundaries above designated, and to be deemed expedient, the convention shall be and hereby is authorized to form a constitution and state government. See, so they're basically laying everything out and helping them come to, you know, how the representation will be done by the different counties. Now, as you understand, the representation was done to ensure that the greater voice would be provided, but when it came down to voting, it was expected that each county got one vote, just like in the constitutional process of ratifying anything for an amendment or what have you. So anyway, moving on, or if it be deemed more expedient, the said convention shall provide by ordinance for electing representatives to form a constitution or frame of government, which said representatives shall be chosen in such a manner and in such proportion as they shall designate and shall meet at such time and place and shall be prescribed by the said ordinance and shall then form the people of said territory within the boundaries aforesaid a constitution and a government provided. Now, so here's the kickers, but let me take a quick break here. What they just said was you can either yourselves create this delegate to create a constitution and a government, or the delegates can then choose specific people, and they kind of lay out the framework of how to do all of that, and then they will be able to create the constitution and state government. Excuse me. However, provided, here's the kicker, that the same, whenever formed, shall be Republican and not repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. Well, shoot, that's kind of important, right? Yes, it is. And that the said legislature of said state shall never interfere with the primary disposal of the soil by the United States, nor with any regulation Congress may find necessary for securing the title in such soil to the bona fide purchasers. What was that? What the heck? What'd they just say? Equal footing? What they just basically said was that the United States was taking possession of the mineral rights. And so, did Virginia already surrender? Did all of the states surrender and, or more importantly, allow the federal government with a constitutional amendment to own and control mineral rights? So this was outside the purview of Congress. This was outside this concept of equal footing, and that no tax shall be imposed on lands the property of the United States, and in no case shall non-resident proprietors be taxed higher than residents. So what they're just, what they just basically said, and that no tax shall be imposed on lands the property of the United States. So in other words, you can't, if this land happens to be the property of the United States, such as a building, you know, like a needful building for a border or a port of entry or something like that, the Constitution dictates what land the federal government constitutionally can have. Forts, magazines, military use, and those types of things. So the states can't tax that land. And in no case shall non-resident proprietors be taxed higher than residents. Well, hold it. What they just said was they took away the state's ability to tax non-resident proprietors higher than residents. There's nowhere in the Constitution that allows the federal government to dictate how a state can tax non-residents and or residents. So, and I think what the intent of this was to ensure that you can't create an economic warfare, because, and I think the language was just wrong that they use for this, because let's say you're creating coffins in state and you have people that are creating coffins out of state. You cannot tax out of state coffins to protect your in-state coffins, those who are operating that business. This is where the Commerce Clause actually allows the federal government to make sure that states don't create economic warfare against other states. However, if there are companies, and I'll give you a good example, because tech companies are operating in states and they're not reporting their revenue. And so the fact is that you can tax any type of revenue that is earned in your state, and you can penalize them and fine them for failing to report revenues. In other words, they're illegally creating revenues and not telling you, or they're violating your laws by not reporting the revenue. I mean, anybody that makes money in a state, that physically has transactions occur in that state, and you're making revenue off of that, you're supposed to report that income and pay taxes on it. And there's way too many big tech companies that aren't doing that. That's one of the reasons why we are, you know, ardently advocating and working with legislators to try to get them to do this. Anyway, Section 5, and be it further enacted that until the next general census shall be taken, the said states shall be entitled to one representative in the House of Representatives of the United States. And be it further enacted that the following propositions be, and the same are hereby offered to the convention of the said territory of Missouri when formed for their free acceptance or rejection, which, if accepted by the convention, shall be obligatory upon the United States. First, that section numbered 16 in every township, and which shall, and when such section has been sold, and this is some nuances that I, yours truly doesn't really understand, but I do understand the intent, and otherwise disposed of other lands equivalent thereto, and to the contiguous as may be shall be granted to the state for the use of the inhabitants of such township for the use of schools. In other words, they're basically telling the states that they have to set aside some land for schools and for education purposes. And so, okay, that makes sense, right? One would think that, okay, you've got to have schools. And as a matter of fact, the Northwest Ordinance dictated that the Bible be used in schools, okay? So anyway. Second, that all salt springs not exceeding 12 in number, well, I don't know, we're talking about salt springs, which are basically like spring water or what have you. And it's kind of interesting why they're making a point out of this, and yours truly doesn't really understand, but for some reason they started stipulating this, and I don't think this is within their constitutional boundaries either, but it's worth pointing out how the nuances. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so here goes an interesting stipulation. That all salt springs not exceeding 12, and I don't know the history or the historical significance of this, but I do not see the constitutional standing for this, because here's a stipulation that they are providing for a state who is to be sovereign, but they're creating stipulations when they don't have any power to stipulate. All land that is surrendered to a state is state land unless it is within the boundaries of the Constitution. And I don't know anywhere in the Constitution that gives the federal government jurisdiction or any control over salt springs. So anyway, that all salt springs not exceeding 12 in number with six sections of land adjoining to each shall be granted to the said state for the use of said state. And the same to be selected by the legislature of the state on or before the first day of January in the year 1825, and the same, when so elected, to be used under such terms, conditions, and regulations as the legislature of the state shall direct, provided that no salt spring, the right whereof now is or hereafter shall be confirmed or adjudged to any individual or individuals shall by this section be granted to the said state, and provided also that the legislature shall never sell or lease the same to anyone to any one time for a longer period than 10 years without the consent of Congress. In other words, there's these Salt Springs out there that you have to have Congress's buy-in to, you know, to do this. And I'm going, are you kidding me? Where is that in the Constitution that you have, you're now being subjugated over Salt Springs, which isn't a delegated power in the Constitution? The federal government has no control over this. Anyway, moving on. Third, that 5% of the net proceeds of the sales of land lying within the said territory or state, and which shall be sold by Congress from and after the first day of January next, after deducting all expenses incidents to the same, shall be reserved for making public roads and canals, of which 3/5 shall be applied to those objects within the state under the direction of the legislature thereof, and the other 2/5 in defraying under the direction of Congress the expenses to be incurred in making a road or roads, canal or canals leading to the said state. Well, hold it. Now, one of the only roads that would be necessary would be a post road that the federal government would have any control over. How a state creates its roads and how a state creates its waterways and canals or what have you is up to the state. This right here is another overreach by the federal government in trying to dictate to them what they can do and what they can't do. And it's interesting that they're saying, well, 5% of the net proceeds have to be set aside and used for and reserved for making public roads and canals. Huh? Really? Where do they have that ability to tell states what percentage they have to tax? This is where states can fail or succeed. And it's up to a state to be able to do that. It is not for the federal government to determine, well, we believe that this is the formula you need to follow. No, they can't create the formula. What they do is they prepare the state to make sure the state speaks English, to make the state, you know, using the dollar, currency, banking, those types of things. But that's it. Anyway, fourth, that 4 entire sections of land be and the same are hereby granted to the said state for the purpose of fixing their seat government thereon, which said sections shall, under the direction of the legislature of the said state, be located as near as may be in one body at any time in such townships and ranges as the legislature aforesaid may select on any of the public lands of the United States, provided that such locations shall be made prior to the public sale of lands of the United States surrounding such location. So what we really are seeing here, and if I can kind of editorialize looking back on what these stipulations are really doing, is it seems obvious that the federal government wants, and they were making money off the sales of the land. And so that's nice, but there's nowhere in the Constitution where the federal government could actually do that. They can't sell land. Those territories, they can regulate, but and they could help develop. But there was no amendment to the Constitution to allow them to sell these territories to be used as states. That was really something given to the states. Well, now that the federal government had it, and this was the beginning of, I believe, the corruption of government in assuming, you know, some of these things that they had no constitutional standing to do, which paved the way for them to say, you know what, we need to control land in America for much longer, for much more than just this. And I am telling you that that was a huge violation when they created the Department of Interior, or the Department of Home was what it was called in 1849. What we call today the Department of Interior, there was no need to create this bureaucracy other than the fact that they were rubbing their grubby mitts together and saying, we need to be able to make money and have control over state property. When a state becomes a state, and when it is declared a state, all land within that state, except things that are within the Constitution that the federal government has dictated, we need to have a fort in Missouri. We need to have these needful buildings, these installations for military and our security purposes. Okay, that's within the Constitution, but that's it. They can't create parks. They can't create, you know, mineral rights. None of those things are within the Constitution. So this is already, and where are we? This is the 1820s. So they've already started migrating, and I haven't looked at the other states during Jefferson and Madison and how they came to these conclusions where they could do these things. But clearly, this is not necessary and proper. Now, there may be, you know, mechanisms of them making revenue or so forth, but I challenge it. I challenge anybody that says that these things were considered necessary and proper in, you know, in executing these foregoing powers. Anyway, where were we? I went so long on a break. Okay, fixing for the government seat and direction the legislature said would be located as near as the one body. Okay, so the one thing I did want to point out, because if you look at Missouri, Lincoln, which is the capital of Missouri, happens to be in the center, right? Pretty much in the center. And one of the things that I know they had as a law back in those days is that a county seat had to be within one day's travel. In other words, whatever the mean and mode of travel, you had to be able to go from your home to the county seat and back in one day. And so there was no way, if Jefferson was in the center, that could be done, but at least it was an equal distribution throughout the state to make it fair so that the people in the south and the people in the north of the state had the same burden of getting to their state legislators and so forth. So I understand some of these things in trying to create this logical sense. And when you kind of look at, you know, some of the state governments, you'll see that the capitals, they tried to make them, you know, centered. I mean, Austin isn't centered. There's several states that don't have a centered capital. I mean, Virginia is way off on the eastern seaboard with Richland, and they've got a lot of land to the west of them. So I think what they were trying to do is they were trying to create a better standard of uniformity. But again, show me in the Constitution where they could do these things. Anyway, provided that such locations shall be made prior to the public sale of the lands of the United States surrounding such locations. So in other words, they're already telling this new state that they're going to be making sales of the lands. Anyway, so where are we? The fifth, that the 36 sections or one entire township shall be designated by the President of the United States together with the other lands heretofore reserved for that purpose, shall be reserved for the use of a seminary of learning and vesting in the legislature of said state, to be apportioned solely to the use of such seminary by the said legislature, provided that the five foregoing propositions herein offered are on the condition that the convention of said state shall provide by an ordinance irrevocable without the consent of the United States that every and each tract of land sold by the United States from and after the first day of January next. So they're kind of laying this gauntlet down that you got to have this, you know, you got to have this higher education, the seminary, which, you know, is advanced like college, and that they're trying to create this concept that the federal government is going to be able to sell land that they still consider as territory. What? As soon as that state becomes a state, the governor, be right back after
if
this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
All right, so see, I hate starting to try to go into a break and try to get a thought finished or getting it out there. So forgive me. I had no intent of, you know, going on and overstepping my boundaries. Anyway, this really irks me, because this whole concept of the federal government selling land to make money was not within the Constitution. And the question is, how much land in Kentucky and, you know, and Tennessee, which was a part of the Virginia Territory, how much land did the United States, were they able to sell of that? No, that was Virginia's land. Well, just because states had the ability to sell that land before the Kentucky and Tennessee states were created, doesn't give the federal government the ability to do the same in their territories. These territories were foreordained to create states of the union, not for the federal government to maintain a perpetual territory for their benefit. That would have been tantamount to, you know, the Kingdom of England and what Britain was doing in owning land. This is why we go through the ratification debates, because they talk about the importance of the ownership of property and that the federal government was to be confined very specifically to not being able to own property except for very specific purposes. And territories, the purpose of a territory wasn't to sell to people. It was to create and put that territory on pathway to a state. Once people are in that state and starting to produce, you know, products and so forth and sell those products overseas, then the federal government has the ability to tax that those products, you know, put an added tax or an exporting tax on it, an impost on stuff coming in, and tariffs and or duties of things going out. They clearly had the power to do that, but to sell land of a territory, that just wasn't there. It was not in the Constitution. So anyway, when they say by an ordinance irrevocable without the consent of the United States that every and each tract of land sold by the United States from and after the first day of January next, are you kidding? they're basically drawing a line in the sand saying we're still going to be making money up until a very specific point when you become a state. And I honestly believe that was, they stopped stipulating that and they started stipulating even greater constrictions on states, like with Wyoming and the western states. They became greedier and greedier in keeping land from the states, and it's all been done unconstitutionally. Moving forward, they say, shall remain exempt from any tax laid by order or under the authority of the state, whether for state, county, or township, or any other purpose whatever, for the term of 5 years from the day after the sale, and further, that the bounty lands granted. So in other words, they're creating these sales pitches to say, you know, you can buy this land and you won't have to pay taxes to the state on it for 5 years. You know, so you better buy the land from us. They're actually creating an advantage for the purpose of them to sell this state property for 5 years from after the day of the sale. And further, that the bounty lands granted or hereafter to be granted for military services during the late war shall, while they continue to be held from the patentees or their heirs, remain exempt as aforesaid from the taxation for the term of 3 years from and after the date of the patents respectively. Section 7, and it be further enacted that in a case a constitution and state government shall be formed for the people of the said territory of Missouri, the said convention or representatives, as soon thereafter as may be, shall cause a true and attested copy of such constitution or frame of state government as such be formed or provided to be transmitted to Congress. In other words, Congress wants a copy of your constitution. They want to make sure that you're in compliance to the Constitution, even though they may not be. And be it further enacted that in all the territory seceded by France to the United States under the name Louisiana, which lies north of 36 degrees and 30 minutes north latitude, not included within the limits of the state contemplated by this act, slavery and involuntary servitude otherwise than the punishment of crimes whereof the parties shall have been duly convicted shall be and is hereby forever prohibited, provided always that any person escaping into the same from whom labor or service is lawfully claimed in any state of territory of the United States, such fugitive may be lawfully reclaimed and conveyed to the person claiming his or her labor or service as aforesaid. Approved March 6, 1820. And so some of these things were kind of like, okay, these are stipulations in the Constitution, but there's clearly, and I wanted to show by 1820, they already started overreaching what they could do in establishing new states. And this was just a rubbing their grubby mitts in trying to make, you know, a lucrative opportunity off of this land. Now, there's no doubt in my mind that the federal government, you know, had a great opportunity in purchasing and buying this land, but they should never have been making money. Their whole essence of creating money within the Constitution was to lay in taxes, duties, and imposts, you know, and tariffs and those types of things, to create a tax on goods and productivity, not to stifle it, but as the form of revenue. But they started going down these paths of saying, we're just like states. No, you don't own any land. The only land that the federal government owns is the land of D.C. proper and those lands and needful buildings that are within the constraints of the Constitution. That's it. So I hope you found this one a little bit enlightening, maybe informative, to help you understand that the Missouri Compromise was actually a very visible testament, if, you know, within this document, we could clearly see that the federal government was already going and expanding. This was only 1820. They were already expanding what they think they could do and creating these little portals for giving them money, power, and what have you. So I think it's really important to share, you know, this type of information and actually point out the historical accuracy or inaccuracy when one is actually looking at how the federal government and how slavery was managed and how history has recorded slavery as a societal thing. I mean, when history.com came out and said many of the people favored slavery, that's absolutely incorrect. If you looked at the Constitutional Convention, many of the people at the convention did not favor slavery. It was only three states and the delegates. They were that close, literally, they were that close to being able to strike out slavery in the United States. Had they just said, go ahead, Georgia, go ahead, Carolinas, leave. Good luck with Spain to the south. Good luck with dealing with France. Good luck with dealing with Britain. We're here to tell you that if you start letting them in, then we will be at odds with you as well. And by laying down that gauntlet, that there's no doubt in my mind, Georgia and the Carolinas and America would have been far better off. But what ended up happening was the opportunities of the affluence and being able to, you know, have that seat of power because of these elitists that controlled all of these lives and all of these resources was really the corruption, or I should say the seed of corruption, that caused America to go down this wrong path. And again, I think we could have kept this out of America from the very beginning. But because they didn't, then the only way America could be sanctified in, you know, in the future from these, let's call them sins, this transgression of liberty, to say that this is the land of liberty, except for, is hypocrisy. And so, to me, the only way that we were actually going to be sanctified, because Britain bought its way out in paying reparations to the slave owners for their lost property. And by giving them this money, seed money, it allowed them to basically, you know, pay these slaves to come back and work for them. So it kind of helped them economically. But I truly believe that the way we were sanctified is by the spilling of blood and those who are willing to die for all to have liberty. And to me, that in itself is a testament of the soul of America. We are the land of the free. And so when we come back in our next episode, we will be going through the Madison's letter to George Jackson, and then we'll be diving into the Monroe Doctrine. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.